Over the Cliff with Cliff Reeve on Triple M.
Indeed, it's Over the Cliff, the first of the podcast series, and it's Cliff here. That's why we've called it Over the Cliff. Well, one of the other reasons we've called it Over the Cliff is because we could go anywhere. We could go down a rabbit hole, and let's face it, Down the Gurgler was already taken for the podcast name. Going to be talking to some people who you will know to get some stories that you may not know. And the first person I wanted to get for this, and it's kind of interesting because this isn't actually going to be on air on Triple M, it's just the podcast, so you'll be able to download it, you'll be able to listen to it, please, and you'll be able to just get it wherever you want to via the catch-up page at triplem.com.au. First person, they call him the sports freak, Daniel Leach. Hello.
I think we're listening to it now anyway, aren't
we? I think we are, yeah.
Yeah, so hello if you have.
The sports freak.
Hi.
Where did that come from? Who gave you that name?
Stupidly, I came up with it myself, actually. It's one of those things back in high school, and I was a strange old kid. I'll just say this right now. Very strange old kid.
Oh.
Well, no big surprises for anyone that knows me. But I, you know, catch the bus into school at, you know, the 423 on the way, the 446 actually on the way to Sacred Heart College. And it'd be me and one of my best mates. And I'd just bring this like paper along, like, you know, cut out. And I'd just run through the sports scores with him and just, you know, pretend I was on the radio and just knowing all this stuff about sport. He's like, how you know this stuff is a bit freaky.
Mm.
And then for some reason it just fell from that. But then, I had that about year 11. And then I remember coming up talking to a man in the media, Craig Hutchison, who now runs Croc Media.
He does.
He's quite a big force in sports media. And he goes, gee, because I'd put that as my Twitter handle. And he goes, geez, you did well bringing that, you know, managing to score that. That's a fantastic name. I was like, I'll keep that then in that case.
Better not move away from
that. No, but I mean, look, I mean, I've always been a fan of just about anything that that is sporting like. I'm not the sort of person that watches too much drama TV. I'll maybe watch a couple of things that are like, you know, story-based and things like that. But for some reason, it's just the live element of a sporting competition that's just fantastic for me. It just really is exciting, and you seriously have no idea what is going to happen, which is great.
And I suppose in a way, there is the drama.
Of course,
like
there is.
The footy grand final that we just had. I mean,
exactly,
that's
right.
Edge of your seat stuff. So there is drama. There is heartbreak.
Yeah.
You've got, it could have been the fairy tale of Melbourne.
Absolutely,
getting there for the first time since 1964. So you've got that kind of thing that goes with it too. But were you from a sporting family? Mum played sport? Dad played sport? Whatever?
Not really. Mum never really played sport to my knowledge. Dad was a very good rugby player when he was growing up.
Mm.
But when he's come over from New Zealand, you know, we're not that interested in rugby at a young level, but he knows that obviously, you know, the kids are interested in netball and they're interested in football. So, of course, my two sisters went off and played netball and they were very good without, you know, trying to go to heady heights, but I reckon if both of them wanted to give it a crack, I reckon they would have been pretty good at it.
So they're young. Are they younger than you or older than you?
No, so I've got an older sister who's 8 years older and an older sister who's six.
Okay.
So I'm the baby of the family, which is why I got into radio, because I was looking for attention and no one would find it, so I just had to keep talking and talking and talking. Although I reckon the middle child, Carly, would probably give it a red hot crack as well. I, of course, went to play football. Dad obviously wanted to get involved, and so he became team manager pretty much first year I was in sort of, you know, junior level, that sort of Oz kick level.
And what team was this?
This is at the Warwick Football Club. They're now the Warwick Greenwood Junior Football Club.
Mm.
But the old Saints, they're now the Knights. And, I was okay at football without being great.
Mm.
But for some reason, I'd be the sort of kid that would be, you know, talking to the other, my opponent in the back pocket, just chatting away.
You're not allowed to do that. I got into trouble too.
And you
and I have talked about this in the past that, like, I was not a footballer's backside.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't big enough.
Yeah.
I wasn't fast enough.
Mm.
I wasn't strong enough.
Yeah.
And I didn't really want to be there.
Yeah.
And I can remember getting absolutely yelled at one time in junior footy.
Yeah.
Because the ball was always down that end.
Yeah.
Okay. For this game. I don't know who we were playing for, but it was Brentwood something or other. and we weren't in the game.
No.
Down my end. So I'm talking to this kid I was playing. I thought, what am I going to do? I'm just going to ignore him.
Right.
And then I got bawled out by the coach. He said, oh, you're not supposed to talk to him. You're supposed to hate him out there. I said, well, he seems like a reasonable kid. I'm just having a chat. No, he's the opponent. You talk to him after the game. I thought, mate, you're a kid. What are you talking about? You're a goose, pal.
Yeah. No, I mean, there's, you know, I knew a lot about football and knew, you know, I sort of learned a lot about the game growing up. But athletically, not that great. They did try to put me on the wing a few times. They learnt pretty quickly that, well, that probably wasn't the greatest of ideas.
Not a runner?
No, not really. But I still have to this day just moments that just stick in your mind from, say, football games that you might have played when you were a kid, or, you know, if you were playing sort of at league level, reserves level, whatever. But I have this memory, and it's a very audible memory of just my dad yelling, "Chase it, Daniel! Chase it!" And that's all you would hear. And the stupid thing is that would replay in my mind over and over again. It's like, oh, they were the moments I didn't like about playing football. Just hearing, not necessarily my dad, but just having that constant pressure of you've got to be there. But the football players that go and do it these days, they obviously love it. And they get paid a fair bit, the ones that love it as well.
Did you take it seriously, as in you've got to go out there?
No.
And again, something else that you and I have talked about in the past, I can remember one Sunday morning where it was pouring rain. It was freezing cold.
Yep.
And again, you know, we were nowhere. And the coach was going, we've got to get out there. And I'm standing at the back going, you look ridiculous.
Yeah.
Are you seeing yourself here? So that was another thing that said to me, I don't think this bag is for me. Sounds like you were in the same boat.
I'll tell you my favourite training session moment. It was the morning of Kieran Perkins' 1996 Atlanta gold medal swim.
Whoa.
The 1500.
Yes.
And it started getting pretty wet outside. So much so that there was a little bit of thunder and lightning, and we'd driven to where training was, which was at Hawker Park, I'm pretty sure it was, near Sorrento.
Mm.
And we've sort of rocked up. We've rode around for 10, 15 minutes. The coach has rocked up and said, nah, weather's horrible. So you might as well go home. And we went, great. Got home just in time for Kieran Perkins to win his gold medal. It was one of my great memories.
You're not going to have to tell me twice, coach. See you later.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
But, I mean, yeah, I was not the very most of athletic kids. And I've had trouble with my weight, you know, as a kid and wanting to overindulge and things like that. I was okay sort of at university level because I was doing a radio and TV course, which was a silly idea, I think.
Mm.
Because at TV, you have to look thin. And I tried to look thin and I was like, this doesn't do it for me.
Not working.
No.
And the funny thing is, despite the fact that you absolutely love sport, you don't play anything now, do you? Not that I've known of for you some years.
Yeah, on the odd occasion I play a bit of tennis.
Mm.
I love tennis. Like if I can get out there and find a regular partner to hit up with, that'd be great.
Mm.
I want to get into AFL Nines. This competition that's going on, I'd like to get back into that and play a bit more.
On the wing?
Okay, let's go. Let's not go too far.
Don't push.
Maybe
it.
A back pocket, I'd say.
Mm.
Just a nuggety back pocket, I would have thought. But look, like I said, not the gifted of sporting talents, but just amazing to see those that do have the talent for it and what they're able to do and the joy that it gives a lot of people. People join, you know, become members of football clubs. They become members of sporting organisations because they go out there and they see these, you know, 25, 30 odd people that play for their team give them a great deal of joy.
Mm.
And, you know, you would see that with Fremantle and we can joke about how, but at the same time you support them because, you know, you appreciate what they do going out.
I was a Freo boy.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's where that came from.
Yeah.
Mate, we're rebuilding.
You're always rebuilding, but that's fine.
Yes.
So sport's always been a huge, huge part of my life.
Mm.
Over the Cliff with Cliff Reeve on Triple M.
Yes, it's Over the Cliff, our podcast. Daniel Leach, the sports freak, our first guest.
This has moments where it just stops for a tick.
It's very strange.
That's nice. I like it.
I'm getting used to it. I'm trying to get my head around the fact that we don't have to have a conversation.
Was that a moment where people can pause it, go to the toilet if you need to, and then
yeah. Mate, this production cost us
squillions.
Several dollars.
Yeah, I know.
I want to talk to you about the radio career, and you did mention that you wanted to get some attention when you were younger.
Yes.
So there was that kind of look at me thing. But when did it solidify that you decided that you wanted to be on and in radio?
Yeah, I was probably, I reckon it would have been 13 or 14, so going through high school. And, you know, listening to the radio all the time and going, oh, geez, that'd be amazing to do. It'd be great fun. And then eventually getting to sort of 16 years of age and going into year 12. And you know how you have the careers counsellor that you go to.
Painful.
And our careers counsellor, who had an interesting sort of accent, was like, all right, boy. Look, you like to talk a lot, obviously, don't you? I was like, on the odd occasion, I suppose. You know, you can get into radio. I was like, yeah, I know you can get into radio, but how do you actually get into it? And then, you know, you can go these different pathways. You can do some, you know, volunteer work here and there and there. And then all of a sudden, there was just a course that was happening at Edith Cowan University with WAPA, the West Australian Academy of Performing Arts, where it was like a radio TV thing. And I thought, look, I'm going to do a journalism course, worst case, but I'll give it a crack, put my hand up to do it. And some sort of legends of radio, Murray Jennings and Len Wheeler, who were very big at like the ABC and 6PR in Perth, and they were part of the course. And it just went up and did the audition, didn't think much of it, got a letter that said, look, you haven't been chosen, but you're on the standby list. I was like, oh, everyone gets that letter, that's fine.
Yes.
And then it was the day before, or 2 days before Australia Day, and got a phone call from the head honchos and said, look, someone's dropped out and you've got a chance to go in. And I went, that's crazy.
There's a sliding door moment.
Yeah, it was. And from there, it's just been a lot of fun. It really has been fun. This radio game can be quite taxing at times.
quite.
It can be. I mean, you know, you go on the radio and everyone thinks you speak for 3 hours and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot that goes on behind the scenes.
Well, but, I want to come back to that, but let's go back to the start first off.
Yeah.
When you said that you wanted to be in radio and talking on the radio.
Yeah.
I remember what it was like in 1972-73 when I announced that. But when you announced it, it was a different world. And yeah, okay. But what was it like? Did you have people going, oh no, for heaven's sakes, get a proper job? No. You have to get some proper job.
Oh, I think most of my friends were like, well, that just makes sense. Mum and dad were probably not entirely sure of it, but it was good when I got to year 12 and Mum was suggesting it, and it was like, okay, they see it as an actual career, and it is an actual career, obviously.
Of course it is.
Most of the people that I've known have been really supportive of it, which is really cool.
And then you went to Narrogin,
yes,
to
first gig,
then Radio West in Narrogin. What are your memories of that?
That was great fun. Vin Dawes was the man that was leading it at the time, along with Danny McCallum, who's now Danny Asprey, Joe McNamara, and myself. And it was the four of us, and we were Tubbs Dawsey's Angels. I obviously was just the floater. It wasn't really me that was an angel in that regard. I've said it so many times. You go into these regional markets and you can learn whatever you can at a university, but once you get into a job,
Day one,
you learn it all just like that. The first 3 months, I learned everything that I probably should have learned in 3 years doing a university course.
Mm.
It was just so much fun. You're thrown into the deep end. I remember doing 48 days straight and didn't care. It was just great fun. You know, just, you know, doing breakfast, paneling football on the weekends, doing a sports show on a Saturday, sporting culture in Narrogin.
Oh, yeah.
Anyone that's grown up in that sort of upper grade southern area, it is huge.
Well,
not just
I mean,
for football, for hockey, for netball,
For
cricket. It's just an amazing place for that.
But that's everywhere. In regional WA.
Absolutely.
That is all over. And then the seasons change and you'll go from footy
to cricket.
Yeah. And then, you know, the pre-season for footy starts and then the hockey, the upper Great Southern, and the Great Southern area has got some fantastic hockey players
indeed.
And some great footy players as well.
Yeah.
But did you get involved in sport yourself, or was it on the periphery again of reporting, getting the details
because
for your
shows? Doing 48 days straight.
Probably not.
No, it was, I was wanting to do a bit of volunteer work at the Narrogin Hawks, but again, work just gets in the way. I think that's just one of the things that I've tried to wean myself off. I can be quite the workaholic. You can vouch for that.
Mm-hmm.
I can be quite the workaholic, and I think a bit of that comes from my dad, who, you know, was one of these people who would work his absolute backside off because he's supplying for the family.
Yeah.
And he would sacrifice his time, be at work, in order to make sure that we've got some sort of, you know, decent living.
Yeah.
I sort of accidentally caught that bug, but at the same time, I absolutely love what I do, so I've got no dramas being a bit of a workaholic in this job.
Do you take my line of there are people in radio and radio people?
Yeah. Well,
just explain that for everyone.
So the idea is there's people in radio and there are radio people. People that just rock up and just do the job 9 to 5 and that's it.
Mm.
People that are radio people are the people that just get stuck in, will give up their time, be a part of the radio station, go out and do whatever that needs to be done. And I've told this story about 3 months ago when I was lucky enough to give you an award at an awards night recently for celebrating 25 years in our station. And that was the very first thing I remember being here in Bunbury, was walking into your office. And that was one of the things. You go, there's people in radio and there's radio people, and I can tell you're a radio person. And that stuck with me for pretty much the whole time I've been here.
Yeah, because radio people would sell their grandmother for the right to do it.
Yes.
And if they came to us and said, geez, we haven't made any money, haven't sold any ads, we can't pay you, then we would still show up. And the joke is that if we win the lotto, well, I'm going away. No, we wouldn't. We'd still come to work.
Yeah, we've joked about that a few times in the last, I reckon, 3 or 4 years.
Mm.
But, I've always thought about that. You know, if you win lotto, but this is fun.
It's the best gig in the world.
How could you give up doing something like this?
Drives you crazy, but, you know, it's the very best.
It drives us crazy, but it drives us crazy. You know, we could be working in the mines, and that's a tough job. We could be, you know, building houses or working on on the streets, you know, like the paving that's going on out the front right here right now that you're a big fan of. We could be breaking our backs right now. Instead, we're in a cozy little studio. We get to talk about the things that are going on in the world. Mm. We get to have a bit of fun. We get to play some music. It's great.
But the other thing is we get to help people too.
Yeah.
And this is something that I think is more and more relevant for, look, I don't know, maybe I'm being unfair there, but I think it's more relevant to people in the regional areas than it is in the city areas, where I don't know, it's different, but in the regional areas, when there's a fire, when there's a flood, when there's an emergency, when someone needs a hand, we are lucky enough to be in the position to be able to do that.
Oh, absolutely.
And help people through some hard times and some good times.
Yeah, absolutely right.
That's it. Now, I want to talk to you because a lot of people, most people, in fact, won't know of what you do behind the scenes. Because let me tell you, beloved podcast listener, if it wasn't for Daniel Leach, Triple M would not get on air and stay on air.
Well,
because
that's the engineer's job. But
Putting the computers and the programs on so that the songs play and the ads play.
And trust me, when it doesn't work, you know about it because there's steam coming out of my ears.
It's not nice. Just explain that.
Yeah. So obviously there's a system that works behind the scenes that plays everything. It's our little new Zeta system that we've got.
Yeah.
It's all very flash and far too new, and we haven't crashed it too many times yet.
I miss queuing up records, though.
But see, that's the thing. That's the one thing I really would love to bring back. We should do a week of... I remember doing it at university. It was great fun. It was edge of your seat stuff, but it was great fun. But a computer does it all now. And in order to make sure that it works, there's a skeleton that you have to build behind the scenes in order for it to all work. And it's not as if we've got just one station. We have how many stations? We've got about...
What, today?
Yeah, well, there's 20-odd stations that we have in our sort of regional WA network overall. Mm. And it's a beast to try and keep a hold of. So, yes, there's that and there's a lot of other sort of tinkering that goes on. But, it can mean some sleepless nights. A lot of times where I look at the clock and go, oh, I've had 2 hours sleep. Great.
And if the blue light goes off over the top of Daniel's desk, get out of the road because he's got to fix something.
I know.
Something that probably one of us has messed up.
Oh, and look, I mean, it'd be great if it was just one station we all had to look after and that was it, because it'd be a lot easier.
Mm.
But we cover a big breadth of regional WA. And, things can go wrong.
Mm.
And that's why if anyone listens and things are going wrong, just think of Cliff Reeve and myself running in a hamster wheel.
Especially Daniel.
Just, you know, as if we're running in a hamster wheel, just thinking, help us!
No, we just get out of the road.
No, that's right.
We make sure that you can get to where you need to get to.
Yeah.
Daniel, do you need a hand? No, I don't. Shut up. I'm doing this over here.
I'm fixing things.
Can we fix it? No, he probably can, I think. It's Cliff here and with our special guest, Daniel Leach.
You're listening to Over the Cliff with Cliff Reeve on Triple M.
We have interesting people to meet. This is the first of the series, and thank you for having a listen to it. Dan Leach, the sports freak from Triple M. You've been with us for more than 10 years now. You have had rewards. Tell me about Imran Khan.
Oh, wow. Yeah, okay. Glad you brought that up. So I was lucky enough in 2008 to go to the Australian Commercial Radio Awards. First time I actually put something up for the awards, and it was our coverage of the Southwest Football League final series, which I was pretty proud of, myself and Vin Dawes and a couple other people that were involved in it, and I was like, okay, we'll put something together. You only get 60 seconds to impress a whole bunch of judges, which is true. A stupid thing, but anyway. So we put that forward, and it ended up winning, which was pretty darn cool. But the person that was there to award it was Imran Khan, who's now, what, president or Prime Minister of Pakistan? Which is a bit impressive. Mm. But all I could think of, if you grew up in the early 90s and watched the D Generation, in particular The Late Show, you would know of Rob Sitch, who would be able to do impersonations galore, and his impersonation of Imran Khan at the time was quite spectacular, where all you'd hear is this, I'm like a tiger. I make love to you like a tiger. Rah. And that's all I could think of in my head as I'm walking up, dazed and confused, going, oh my God, I've just won an award. Oh my God, Imran Khan's a tiger. Like a tiger. And that's all I could think of. I was like, stop thinking about that. I chuckled a little bit as I shook his hand.
How was the handshake?
It was great. Yeah. And the day before was interesting because usually at these awards, they have a conference the day before. He was one of the guest speakers. And obviously he was talking about his sporting career, but also his political career. And just lucky enough to ask him a question at the time. Mm. As this 23-year-old who, you know, finds himself lucky enough to be at this conference and just go, I was going to ask Imran Khan a question if that's all right. Thanks, guys.
Take your shot.
Yeah, exactly. And, it was quite the fascinating experience. But, I mean, you know, he's just like anyone else. He's, you know, wondering why he's at this awards night and lucky enough to be there and getting
paid lots of money, probably.
Yeah, exactly.
What was the question that you asked him?
Oh, God, it was 15 years ago now or whatever it was. I can't remember. Yeah. It would have been something to do with mixing sport and politics.
Aha.
Yeah, because obviously he was starting to get quite political at that time.
And do you get starstruck?
Oh, God, yeah. Absolutely. How could you not?
I'm not just talking about with him.
Yeah, no.
With other people. You've met various others.
Yeah, I remember one of the very first interviews I did was with Steve Waugh. Mm. Face to face for university, and that was like shaking. It's like, oh my God, this is like the outside of the Prime Minister, the highest man in the land, because he's captaining the Australian cricket team at the time.
That's right.
But yeah, I mean, you know, doing any interview, obviously you need to be prepared and you have your questions, but then at the same time you go, I shouldn't be starstruck because they're just like you and me. Mm. But these are people that we've grown up with, that have shaped our lives, that, you know, like a Joe Camilleri. I remember he was one of the first interviews I did for radio at Radio West in Narrogin. And that was amazing because growing up, you know, listening to the radio, listening to the Black Sorrows, listening to Jojo Zepp and the Falcons, it's just, you know, incredible what this man can do. And you got the chance to ask him, you know, for a whole bunch of questions for 5 or 6 minutes.
And you have their attention and they have yours. That's why we say it's the best gig in the world.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's great fun.
You did get a chance to go to the Olympics, which is kind of, I would think, mecca for sports. It doesn't get a whole lot bigger than that, does it?
No. And, you know, like I said, one of the memories I have is Kieran Perkins winning his gold medal in 1996. Mm. I remember growing up, one of the first sort of main things I remember is like a Christmas present outside of a microphone. Yes, I was given a music set, which is a guitar and a microphone stand. And do you reckon I use the guitar? Nah, just use the microphone.
You can't sing, though.
How do you know?
I've been to karaoke with you, Daniel.
How dare you? I can sing very well, thank you. It's just I choose not to. I was such the choir boy, actually, as a kid. But anyway, ask my mum. But yeah, I vividly remember I was 8 years of age and Christmas time, and I had this highlights of the 1992 Olympics. Mm. And it went from Jackie Joyner-Kersee to Sergei Bubka to Kieran Perkins winning his gold in the Barcelona Olympics and a whole bunch of these other moments. And that is the one thing I would watch over and over and over again, because it's like, this is the pinnacle of sport, being at the Olympics. I think a lot of people think that that has changed because of, you know, so much money that's going around in basketball, golf, tennis.
Actually, I do want to come back to that.
Yeah.
But when you went to Rio,
yes,
what did you expect? Because I would imagine, because you're thinking, oh, this is the pinnacle, it's not going to get any bigger than this. 4 years' time, there's going to be another one. But now I am here. Yeah. I'm in Rio. Because I remember when you were at work, you were saying, I'm going off to the Olympics. And not one single person went, yeah, right. We all knew that you were going to do it.
Yeah.
But if you elevate it that high before you even get there, did it live up to expectations?
So the important thing I did was not to try and expect anything. Because I'd never been to an Olympics before. I've heard of stories of, you know how incredible it can be at an Olympic Games. Security is obviously tight, but the facilities are incredible. But you've got to also keep in mind that for the first time, the Olympics went to an area that, you know, doesn't quite have the affluence of most of the places they'd been to in the past.
Well, apart from Copacabana Beach, and then after that, it's not that good.
Copacabana Beach is a great place to go. Go and get yourself a couple of caipirinhas and you're all fine.
Thank you.
Very nice. I've spent far too much time at Copacabana Beach, but that's a different story. But yeah, it's not a terribly affluent area is Brazil. There's a lot of, you know, political strife going on. There's a lot of slums. It's a very different area to what many other Olympics have been to. So in that regard, it was a case of try not to expect too much. Mm. There were obviously some issues leading into it. I remember the first couple of days thinking, oh, this doesn't seem like that's right. This doesn't seem like it's right. Food vendors and things like that. But as the Olympics went on, you could see, you know, Brazil won themselves a couple of gold medals. All of a sudden, the country's like, oh, brilliant. We're into this now. This is fantastic. And there was a lot more pride about their country. And everywhere you would go, there was just the buzz just kept building and building and building. So by the time they got to the Paralympics, which would have been amazing to be at as well, by the time the Paralympics come around, everyone knows about them. The stadiums are actually, you know, very well attended, most of these events. And there just seemed to be a better vibe about it. And the last few days, as I said, at the Olympics were just fantastic. To see an Australian gold medal was the absolute top of what I wanted to do.
Who was
and,
that one?
I went and saw the women's sevens, rugby sevens.
That's right. I remember one of that
the,
now, yes.
Yeah, one of the new sports that came in. And I remember looking around at the schedule to start with and thinking, okay, if I'm going to see an Australian win, where is it more than likely going to be? So I picked... try to get the swimming. That was always hard to get to. Looked at a couple of other events like triathlon and maybe the odd athletic event, but it was women's rugby sevens where it was like, that's probably where we're going to win. And it was a tense game, but and the great thing was also where I was seated was right in and amongst the whole Australian cheer squad, fan squad. All the you know, the parents of the players, family members of players, fiancés. It was just fantastic. What was also incredible, that was the night that one of the Brazilian players, Izzy Chiarello, proposed to her girlfriend.
Oh, fantastic. And you were there?
I was there, saw it happen, and then surprisingly the next day got to meet her. I was lucky enough to do a spot with the BBC. I did a couple of these sort of like, you know, they grabbed a couple of fans, they grabbed a couple of participants, they grabbed a couple of judges, and they did this 1 hour show at around about sort of 10 o'clock Brazil time. And this guy messaged me from the BBC and said, hey, do you want to take part and have a go? I was like, yeah, why not?
On the BBC, thanks very much. I'll take that.
And I might have tried to take over a little bit too much, but that's a different story. The host afterwards says, do I get the feeling you work in radio? I went, yeah, mate, sorry about that. But no, she was there with her fiancé and they were telling the story. And I was lucky enough to get a photo with her and I've still kept in touch a little bit. Mm. And also Gurika Singh, who was the youngest athlete at the Olympics, 14, represented Nepal, but actually lives in the UK. But she was there as well.
Mm.
And it was just fascinating to sort of, you know, talk to these people, have an understanding of, you know, how incredible it is for them to be there.
Mm.
But like I say, it's the pinnacle of sport. And to be able to go to something like that and to live it is wonderful. So I'm doing everything I can to try and go to Tokyo,
I dare say
will be much better run than Rio.
Yeah.
But there's some great memories I had from Rio. It was just a great occasion.
Because when is Tokyo? It's got to be 2020.
Yeah, so it'll be late July, early August.
You'll go.
Well, that's the plan. If the company's listening.
Keep putting the lotto tickets
if
in.
If the company's listening, it's just a few coins that I need, just quietly.
Just a few coins in the fountain. It is Cliff here with Daniel Leach.
Over the Cliff with Cliff Reeve on Triple M.
This is the first of the podcast series that we're going to be doing, and I wanted to get in touch with Dan Leach, and it's taken a few weeks to talk him into doing this, the sports freak.
I've been busy.
Because he's been a little busy.
And you've been busy.
Oh, yeah. You know,
just now, hopefully, hopefully you've now, this is like the fourth segment, when that little sweeper came in, hopefully you all paused it, got yourself a cup of tea, and now you're sitting back down. Is that how podcasts work?
I think so. Well, my podcasts, when I listen to them myself, and there's several that I do, sometimes I listen to them at the gym, which people think is very strange because you're supposed to have music on. It's like, doof, 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 doof. No, I listen to the podcast, and you stop a bit, and then you can see that's the joy.
Yeah, it's up
just,
to you.
If you do stop, just make sure you remember to come back.
But that's the good thing.
Like, I need all the support.
I, you know, try and do a 90-minute walk every day. And I've got podcasts in my ears. It's great.
Yeah, it's where I go.
Yeah.
You're exactly doing better than me. My knees are just about shot, I think.
Oh, no, my calves are feeling it. Don't worry.
No, I'm going to need knees. Glucosamine. Yes. I need a bucket of it somewhere. Are there any sports that you just can't be bothered with? I mean, we call you the sports freak, and we know that if there were two cockroaches, you know, going up that wall,
I'll be there. Yeah.
Then you would be there. But is there any sports you just go, oh, I can't be bothered?
Can I classify WWE as a sport?
Oh.
I don't think I can I? Only because I know it's scripted, and that's why I'm like, ugh. I tell you, there's a sport I've been wrestling with in my head to try and keep with. But because of so many dramas that have been inside it and controversies and scandals, and it's a sport that you love, and that's boxing. Mm. I really do try to keep in touch with it, but at the same time, you see these Manny Pacquiao fights with Floyd Mayweather, and there's that much money that's involved, and I struggle with giving hard-earned money to someone like Floyd Mayweather, who's not the greatest of gentlemen out there.
Yeah, I'm not much of a fan of Conor McGregor either, for that matter. He seems like a wally.
But then again, I'm fine with UFC, which seems bizarre, because it is a brutal sport, that.
It is, but if you look and see, I'm not that much into UFC.
Yeah.
I do like the boxing. The sweet science.
Yeah.
I'm not that. Nah, the UFC, not really. Because, colour me harsh, but I figure you could almost see that down at the pub, you know, sometimes.
Yeah, no, true.
On a Saturday night. Because there's no sweet science about it. But again, that has such drama.
Mm.
The boxing has got, you know, a million years of history, and it's got drama.
It does get a little homoerotic at times, doesn't it, if I want to get a bit Roy and HG all of a sudden?
No, that's Greco-Roman wrestling. You know,
oiled
up blokes rubbing themselves all over the, it's like nothing sus.
No, nothing sus at all.
But what about curling? See, there are some people.
Oh,
say,
no! Give me curling any day.
Really?
Fine. Yeah. No,
there are some people look at synchronized swimming and go, "That's not a sport."
But
it's pretty damned.
It's athletic. Yeah.
Even if you're messing around and you go, "Hey, look at me! I'm a synchronized swimmer," and you try and go upside down and you put your legs in the air and you point your toes and you hold your breath. So there's obviously some athletic capability going on there.
It's one of those things that if you are okay with gymnastics, then you have to be okay with synchronized swimming, because in reality, it's sort of the gymnastic equivalent in aquatics. So
true.
In a way, you sort of have to deal with that. Look, there's not that many sports that are out there that I'm like, oh no, can't really deal with that.
Mm.
Heck, I mean, when the darts were here, what, 3 or 4 years ago, that is the most fun you could have as a spectator.
You'll have to step back. Give us the commentary, all right? Hang on. I'm throwing one. There's one.
Well, you got to have another one. And then a third one. 180! It's just great fun. It is just a jovial event to be at. Look, I mean, even like at times I struggle with a sport like golf, just because you try and play it and it's the hellish, most hellish of games that you could possibly do. But then just watching on the weekend the Ryder Cup.
Yeah.
And the emotion that's involved with that is just remarkable. So, look, I try to keep as much of an open mind with sports that are out there.
But again, you've got the redemption story from Tiger Woods.
That's right.
I mean, the poor bugger could hardly walk last year, apparently. He's had 4 back operations. Everyone wrote him off.
Yeah.
Then he got, was it drunk driving or driving under the influence?
Yeah, there was something like that.
Something like that. So he's been a naughty boy and people are drawing a line and he comes back again. So there's the romantic story of the comeback and yay, he's ours again.
And you know what? We've got to realise that sporting people are a cross-section of the wider world, especially those that are like football players, rugby players, those that are between sort of the ages of like 17 to 34, 35. Mm. If you were to take... say 10% of the 17 to 35 year old public around the country. There would be people that have been in jail. There are probably people that have been, you know, involved in drugs or things like that.
Mm.
You're expecting these 17 to 35 year olds have never been, they have to be like absolute angels. They have to be golden childs.
Mm.
Every single one of them. Not all of them are going to be like that.
No.
And so for the odd one of these players to find themselves in trouble is obviously sad, but it's not surprising either.
Yeah, yeah.
And sometimes I feel like we are far too harsh on these people.
Well, we put them on a pedestal.
Absolutely. And yes, I understand they, you know, some of them get paid a fair chunk of coin.
Mm.
And, you know, that's obviously a question that needs to be asked, you know, should there be as much money in sport, et cetera, et cetera? And does that therefore lead to all these issues?
Mm.
But it's just a societal thing. And I always, you know, we've talked about this so many times about Ben Cousins and how sad a story that is.
Oh, it's tragic.
And it's sad that we have to talk about it.
Mm.
But unfortunately, you put it on the social medias, you put it on TV, people are watching, people will comment, people will care. People will either care affirmatively, like very affirmatively or very negatively, because he might have not played for your team and you didn't like him, and it's like a way of getting back at, say, West Coast or whatever.
It's just dumb.
Which is
still
stupid.
He's a human being. He's a dad.
That's right.
And he's got 2 kids.
Yeah.
And it's terribly sad. But, you know, what is really sad is that he was still out there doing it.
Yeah.
When I think he should have been put into rehab and taken away from that. And it's very, very difficult for these young blokes, not only in footy. I mean, footy is the obvious
absolutely,
one.
Yeah.
But they are so upfront, and we put them on pedestals, and we make sure that they are heroes until they slip, and then that we
absolutely.
just want to tear them down.
Yeah.
But they are young; they're full of testosterone. They're heroes. Mm. They've got women, maybe men, throwing themselves at them. Yep. They've got a bundle of money and a whole lot of time.
And you reckon they're not going to make a mistake?
And who's going to say no to them? And you're right; they're not going to make a mistake. Yeah. Really?
Exactly.
Of course. It's just really sad that the money has come into it. And I wanted to get into money because sport is so corporatized these days.
Yep.
And just recently, over the weekend, we had the NRL Grand Final.
Yes.
Now I know a lot of people don't follow NRL. I sort of kind of do.
Yep.
Billy Slater, the greatest fullback of all time. Yes. Probably. You're going to tell me that they didn't bend the rules to make sure that he could play his last game, because it wouldn't have been the same if Billy Slater wasn't out there. He's a draw card. But that, again, is an indication of, oh, geez, we've got to have him out there because otherwise people might not come to the game.
There would have been a lot of pressure on the judiciary who were making that decision by, I'm sure the NRL would have preferred to have Billy Slater playing in the grand final than
and
not.
Cooper Cronk with a and broken
Cooper
shoulder.
Cronk, obviously, I mean, there's not much you could do about an injury. You just, you know, you hope that he can get out there. But this is where a group of people can say, yes, you can play, or no, you cannot play.
Mm.
And I dare say there would have been a lot of pressure. Having said that, you would have had the Melbourne sort of bosses, and they would have brought in a QC like the West Coast Eagles tried to do with Andrew Gaff a few weeks ago, and try to argue to the best of their ability of, okay, he wasn't meaning to do this. His action wasn't quite a shoulder charge. It was safe enough, et cetera, et cetera. Mm. So they would have gone through a lot of the mechanics of, you know, biomechanisms and things like that to in order for him to get off. It didn't necessarily surprise me that he got off because of that whole thing of you would like to see the best playing out there.
Mm.
Is it a dangerous enough act for him to have missed a game?
Mm.
in that sense, I feel like watching it over and over again, it's not as dangerous as some shoulder charges are in the NRL game.
The rules are the rules. And they.
But
and
sometimes you have to look at a certain instant and go, okay, it's a shoulder charge, but is that actually... is that a bad act compared to what?
If he hadn't been playing his last ever game,
oh, yes.
In the grand final, yeah. Boom, gone.
Oh, but even then, it was the preliminary final going into a grand final. Mm. Same thing.
But that's
if it was round 14 going to round 15.
Completely different, yeah. Altogether. Yeah. But again, that's the corporatization, yes, of sport, the money,
yeah,
everything that goes into it with the sponsorships and the T-shirts.
Yeah.
They reckon that the Eagles will make $2 million out of winning the premiership.
Easily.
Easy. So there's a lot of money in it.
I've bought a fair bit.
And it's I didn't get any. It's not the same as what it used to be.
Yeah.
You're not going to go back again.
Nope.
But how do we make it so that money does not rule everything?
There's going to be a tipping point at some point where, and a lot of it comes from the TV media landscape.
The rights.
The rights to actually getting these. And also, gambling advertisers as well, like your Bet365s, your sports bets, all that sort of thing. There's going to have to be some sort of legislation that's put in about the amount that they are allowed to advertise and the amount that they're allowed to sponsor.
Mm.
Just like with cigarette advertising, where they eventually went, nah, not happening at all.
Mm.
I don't think it'll ever get to that point with gambling ads, but who knows? It could become an epidemic and maybe they're going to have to do that at some point.
Mm.
We can't foresee that just yet.
Mm.
But there's going to be a tipping point where media companies, as much as they are trying to obviously buy the rights to these things, where they go, we just spent $2.5 billion on 6 years worth of AFL.
Yeah.
We don't see the return in it.
You better show me some ratings here.
Yeah, well, can you actually... can you have, say, half of that over the next 6 years and still be able to be successful?
Mm.
The answer is probably yes to an extent.
Mm.
But, you look at some clubs that are raking in the cash, you look at some clubs that aren't, and that's obviously an issue. You can't necessarily equalise that as easy as pie, but money is a big issue in sport. It's no doubt that that's going to be a big issue in the next decade or so.
I wish I had a son who was a soccer player in the, Bayern Munich or something.
Again, I wish I'd taken tennis more seriously.
I think so.
Triple M's Over the Cliff with Cliff Reeve.
And special guest is Dan Leach, the sports freak from Triple M. You hear him each day, but we're finding out a few other stories from Dan.
Oh, I just stretched my legs during that break. That was nice.
Just in closing, a hero. Do you have a sporting hero?
Oh, jeepers. Growing up, it was Guy McKenna from the West Coast Eagles.
Ah.
I don't know exactly why it was. Number 17 didn't really mean much, but I just feel like he was underrated a lot, did a lot for the West Coast Eagles, and he was a ranger. He would have got teased for that as a kid, I reckon, being a ranger. Guy McKenna was sort of my sort of idol growing up. And then as you sort of, go through sort of, teenage years, it's hard not to see someone like a Cathy Freeman as a hero.
Mm.
To be at the Olympics to light the cauldron to start with, and then have all the pressure of running in a 400-meter race. And I've had heaps of people, sort of come back at me as to it wasn't that big a moment in Australian sport.
Yeah, it was.
It was monstrous.
Mm.
It was the whole of the country was hoping that she would win that race.
Mm.
And then watching her after the race, and here's the thing, I never got the chance to actually see the race live.
Mm.
I was up in up north somewhere. We were doing a year 11 safari.
Oh, dear.
Where my parents said, you're going on safari. And I went, it's during the Olympics. And they went, don't care. And I went, no. Anyway, so the second week of the Olympics, I didn't watch it. So we had a transistor radio that I managed to get and listen to the race, and it was obviously fantastic. And I didn't watch the race in full until 3 years later. Just because it was hard to get a hold of. You couldn't, obviously it wasn't necessarily on the internet.
Pre-YouTube and everything, wasn't it?
To a big extent. So I didn't really see the race, but then you watch her after the race is done, just slumped on the side of the track and exhausted. And
yeah.
She said that she's exhausted because of the pressure that she had.
Mm.
and knew that she had. I think she's an amazing role model as well. Yeah, there's just a couple of heroes of mine. I don't think I put Bernard Tomic in there.
No.
No.
See, that comes back to what we were talking about a few moments ago of someone who has got more money than he knows what to do with. He's got a lot of time on his hands. Sure, he's got some talent.
Yeah.
Who's going to say no?
Yeah.
No, Bernard, you can't buy that Ferrari. He's going, hey, hang on, I worked my bum off for this. I've got the money. I'm going to buy it whether you like it or not.
As strange as it may seem, the best thing he could have done was going on, I'm a celebrity, get me out of here.
Yeah, I see. I never watched any.
No, and I understand that. So he took 3 months off. He then went and tried to go get back into like the French Open and Wimbledon, and it never really worked. But in the last 2 months, he's actually having a good spell.
Mm.
Since the US Open, I think there was a stat going around that he'd won 14 of 16 matches.
Because I saw that he was in a match and he saved 4 match points, I think. He didn't just go, showers will be warm now, let's go.
But he's back in the top 100 now, which is obviously, you know, a small step. I don't think he's ever going to get to the heady heights that many were predicting at the start of his career, and the same you could say for Nick Kyrgios. I mean, the big thing for him is just to go out there and try to have some fun. And that's the one thing I remember growing up, watching football, and everything was taken very seriously. During the mid-90s and early 2000s, you'd have Bruce on the TV, Sandy Roberts on the TV, you'd have all these people coming up and being real serious about the footy. And you get into, you know, local football leagues, you get into any sort of football, any sort of sport, and what you've got to realise, being a sporting club is about mateship, is about camaraderie, is about having some fun.
Yep.
And going out and playing something as well.
That's the majority of people. And then you get a handful of people who will make squillions out
absolutely
of it. But again,
but
they've got to do to get there and then to stay there is just...
And that's why it's fascinating reading like biographies from, say, like an Andre Agassi, who, even though he's successful, the amount of times he was saying, I hated being
didn't
out
want to do
there,
it, did he?
Didn't want to do it.
Mm.
And just didn't find the love for it. He eventually found the love for it, the fun of it all. But, being in that high-pressure situation, it's very hard to absolutely find the fun in sort of high-profile sports.
How do you reckon Jelena Dokic would have been with her old man there? That would have been torture for her.
Exactly.
And, of course, we saw her, some sulky girl, and it's like, hang on, there's a story behind this.
And that's the thing, we're so very quick to be judgmental on these people and not know the full extent of what's going on.
Mm.
And that's something that I try to sort of pull back any judgment whatsoever with the, if you see something like that, it's like, well, we don't know the full story of any of this. So let's just find out until we get some full facts about what's going on. Because, some people just maybe a case of like a Bernard Tomic who's like, I'm just not enjoying it at the moment.
No fun.
Need to get out for a bit.
Mm.
And
Philippoussis did that, didn't he?
Exactly. And he went on to TV to try and find love. Like the honey badger is. Fun people, aren't they?
I haven't watched a frame of it.
I'm going to ask you a somewhat serious question.
Yes.
If you were in your like mid-20s, early 30s, would you ever do a show like The Bachelor? Would you have ever done that?
Oh, well, A, no one's going to ask. Really?
No, but let's say. Let's say someone approached you.
No.
With your beautiful long hair that you had going back there.
I had the blonde ponytail didn't I?
It was a delightful look. The amount of photos have been going around this office with that. Oh, it is a good look.
And when I was
put John Farnham to shame.
I was so skinny.
You were.
Not anymore.
No.
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 I got tired of that, thanks.
Tired of that, but you've bulked up well.
Yeah, doing a bit. No. Listen, we need to have a game of tennis one day, son.
I'd love to.
I think that we, I can't play. I could hit it, but don't expect any, 14-shot rallies.
You got on the forehand or the backhand? It's got to work out my tactics, you see.
I can remember once I was playing, when I was in Queensland, I was playing, it was just, some celebrity thing or some such thing.
Yeah.
And I hit this absolutely cracking backhander down the line.
Yeah.
And I actually said to the people, I quit.
Yeah, that's right.
It's never going to get better than that.
I agree.
That was my shot. Yep. I hope you saw that because that's the best it's ever going to be.
I know. Tell me about it.
I don't know how, but I just kind of like, whack. And I went, Jeez, that was a bit good.
Yeah. It's the first time and only time that you've hit it sweet.
That is exactly the case.
Know that feeling.
We'll go and do it. Mate, it has been very nice to talk to you. Thank you for being so open and being the first on our podcast.
Thank you very much. It's been a delight.
Lovely. And there's more to come.
Triple M's Over the Cliff with Cliff Reeve.